This is All In. I'm Matt Pelser. Today, we're talking about a new report that looked into the health and economic impact of the COVID-19 pandemic on neighborhoods in Indianapolis. If you have questions or comments on our show today, find us on Facebook or Twitter at All In Indiana, or leave us a voicemail at 866-476-3881. We just need your name, where you're calling from, and a quick question or comment, and we'll do our best to get it into the conversation today. Again, 866-476-3881, or use our new All In Vox Pop app. Just search All In Vox Pop wherever you get apps, and you can use it to send us a high-quality audio message straight from your phone. We're joined now by three guests. Patrice Duckett is Executive Director of the Fay Bickard Glick Neighborhood Center. Patrice, welcome.
And thank
Ashley
you.
Gervitz, thank you. Ashley Gervitz is Executive Director of the United Northeast Community Development Corporation. Ashley, welcome to you.
Thank you. Welcome for the appreciate the invitation.
And Matt Nolan is information designer and analyst at the Polis Center at IUPUI. Matt, thanks for coming.
Thanks. Glad to be here.
So, Matt, we'll start with you. Can you tell us how this report came about? What was the goal?
Yeah, sure. So I think everyone knows, just as a matter of common sense, that this pandemic has had both a health impact and an economic impact on a lot of families in central Indiana. And our goal was to try to measure that and quantify that. And so we looked at, in terms of health impact, we looked at the number of COVID cases per person in each zip code. In terms of economic impact, we had a few ways to measure that. And it doesn't give you the whole picture, but they're really useful indicators. Things like unemployment claims or applications for rental assistance or calls to the 211 service, where you might call if you need connection to resources for paying utilities or paying your rent or need have food insecurity issues, things like that. And go ahead.
No. Well, I was just going to ask if you found any sort of general things. I'm sure that things varied a little bit from neighborhood to neighborhood, but was there an uptick or a downward trend on anything in particular that you found that was interesting?
Yeah, I mean, they do vary by neighborhood, but we see a clear trend where neighborhoods close to downtown on the kind of near west, northwest, and northeast sides of Indianapolis are the highest impacted. We found that the health impact from the data we have tends to be highest right in downtown and to the northwest. And then the economic impact, according to our data, tended to be kind of in a ring around downtown and then worse on the northeast and the far east side.
Ashley Gervitz, what does the United Northeast Community Development Corporation do?
Yes, so the United Northeast Community Development Corporation truly assures equitably we are improving the quality of life here for our community. Where typical community development corporations, of course, look into market housing stabilization. Since our organization was founded by residents in 95, everything is intertwined with community voice into how we develop our communities stronger together. And so outside of basic housing development, we oversee and convene our area's quality of life plan, which is a great intersection of assuring businesses, residents, community service providers, anyone that interacts within Northeast Indianapolis, we are doing so for the overall better benefit of our community.
Can you tell us about the actual community itself, the northeast side there, for people who aren't familiar with the area?
Yes, great. So within Northeast Indianapolis, we encompass a few zip codes. One in particular is that of 46218. The second one is 46226. And lastly, 46205. No matter what zip code you have, often or not, we even before COVID, had a lot of economic and socio disparities within our backyard. But overall, no matter those disparities, if we're looking at access to jobs, adequate transportation, food access as a whole, it never overshines just the resiliency and just our wonderful residents we have throughout our Northeast Indianapolis communities.
And Patrice, what is the Faye Bickard Glick Neighborhood Center?
So the Faye Bickard Glick Neighborhood Center is one of 12 community centers or multi-service centers within the city of Indianapolis. Our goal is to help individuals from infants all the way up to seniors. We call them our recycled teenagers. And we provide We provide them a multitude of resources and programs to help deter barriers and to help uplift any basic needs that happens within our community. And so for my area, I service citywide, but I primarily focus on north of 38th Street, inside 465 to the west, which is like High School Road, up to Meridian or Keystone, depending on what funding we have, and then over to the 465 East Highway, which is more like 91st Street. So I have a large area, about 105,000 people that we service within our catchment.
You brought up money. What does that look like right now? How is the funding looking, and how is it affecting who you can serve and who you can't?
So in actuality, we have been able to receive an abundance of, I wouldn't say abundance, but a large amount of funding to service residents within our area that have been immediately impacted by COVID. One of the funding sources we've received is from Indy Rents, which is ran through Marion County, City of Marion County. And that actually we've been able to utilize $2.5 million just with our organization alone to help with over 700 individuals pay and keep their rent current so that there's no evictions. We've also had great assistance from the Lilly Endowment to help staff the work here for food pantries and also for case management to help with barriers that individuals are really impacted by. And United Way has also provided funding for that immediate COVID need. So they helped with making sure that we were stocking our food pantries. We were providing delivery services for individuals that were at home. We do have 8 senior services here. We have a large number of seniors that live in our area, so we have to kind of pivot and really focus on them because they are isolated right now, sitting at home and unable to travel and be out and about because of the risk factors of this pandemic.
I actually used to live near the Faye Bickard Glick Neighborhood Center, and I liked what you said about older folks being recycled teenagers. Every older person that I ever ran into in that neighborhood, I mean, they were all doers. They were all very active. Can you tell us about a little more about the area and the whole community? What would you say is the status of the community right now amid the pandemic?
I think our status is surprisingly, we are slowly moving back into health, but very slowly. We are very close to a lot of medical facilities, so we have a lot of essential workers here. I am minutes away from Park 100, so we have a lot of individuals that are working inside of the warehouses and doing hands-on work. And so for a minute there, we kind of were dormant out here. And so a lot of people were impacted by that. And so they're slowly starting to pick up and get back to work. But it's been a great impact over here in our area. We have one of those zip codes, the 46254, which represents not only our community, but it represents a high percentage of our immigrant population. And they need the assistance and the help as well. And so we're trying to figure out how do we help that area along with the individuals, our essential workers, and the workers that were hands-on and working every day, but now have to look at different job opportunities and employment.
And Matt Nolan, how did you decide what to focus on with this, the Savvy Report? Let's get back to the report. The pandemic, I mean, it's having an impact on virtually everything. I would be overwhelmed to choose what to focus on. Were you?
Well, it is clearly having an impact on everything and everybody. And that's one of the things when you look at the maps in this study, we show areas that are more or less impacted, but it's important to remember that everybody's lives are transformed no matter what zip code you live in. But we wanted to take an approach where we looked at both the impacts this year and kind of the background, like socioeconomic and health vulnerabilities that exist in communities. Because we know that if, take two families that are undergoing the same crisis. One has plenty of savings and has, you know, a high educational attainment and has gone to college, and they lose their job. It's a big setback. It's a crisis, but they have some resources and some avenues to get through that. Whereas take a second family who has not had enough income to save and does not have the educational attainment to get a high wage job. They lose their job. They're in more of a bind, right? So we wanted to incorporate both those near-term impacts and those vulnerabilities, because while that's true at a family level, that's really true at the neighborhood level too. That's just thousands and thousands of families that are all in that situation. So because of that, we didn't just look at, you know, who's losing jobs now or getting COVID now. We looked at also what neighborhoods historically have high rates of poverty or high rates of unemployment over the past 5 years, even what neighborhoods have high rates of diabetes and cancer and different health vulnerabilities that are known to relate to COVID-19.
Less than 30 seconds to answer this question, so we may have to come back to it to a degree. But, I mean, it's hard enough getting data. What about getting good data? Was it a challenge to get good data to put all this together?
I'll say that's part of what makes it easier to scope this project. It's overwhelming, but we're limited by, like, what we can measure. That said, we've had great data partners in the Marion County Health Department, in the Indiana Department of Workforce Development, and there's a lot of fantastic public data sources that we're able to access to that facilitate all this research.
We'll be back with our guests after a quick break. We're talking about a new report on the health and economic impact of the COVID-19 pandemic on neighborhoods in Indianapolis, the capital city. If you have questions or comments for the show, find us on Facebook or Twitter at All in Indiana, or leave us a voicemail at 866-476-3881, 866-476-3881, or leave us a high-quality audio message with our All in Vox Pop app, which you can download for free wherever you get apps. We'll be back in 90 seconds. This is All In. This is All In. I'm Matt Pelser. We're talking today about a new report from Savvy at IUPUI on the health and economic impact of the COVID-19 pandemic on neighborhoods in Indianapolis. We would love your questions and comments on the topic. We're on Facebook and Twitter at All In Indiana, or you can leave us a voicemail with your first name and where you're calling from at 866-476-3881. We would love to hear your voice in the conversation today, especially if you live in one of the neighborhoods we're referring to in Indianapolis. Call 866-476-3881 and share your experience. And we're talking, of course, today with Patrice Duckett, Executive Director of the Faye Bickard Glick Neighborhood Center, Ashley Gervitz, Executive Director of the United Northeast Community Development Corporation, and Matt Nolan, Information Designer and Analyst at the Polis Center at IUPUI. Ashley Gervitz, what did you think of the report and the findings when you saw it?
You know, the reports, I think, provide a good quantitative analysis of the stories we hear from the residents every single day. Now, of course, as mentioned before, seeing that of the economic impact, we have known that as far as us stabilizing as a community, having that of access to good capital that can be integrated within the homes has been a long deserving wish for many here. So with the findings itself, it wasn't so much of a surprise, but more so, I think in review of it, I was very thankful that it provided a good opportunity to us now strategize on how we create more gaps to be filled, which can ultimately help transform our community especially during a time of major needs of resiliency.
What else, though, could there be? Is there any more research that could be done that would be particularly helpful for you and the efforts you're a part of? Maybe more focus on one thing or another, specific information you're lacking right now?
Yeah, I think one thing in particular is just the overall aspect of who's all working within Northeast Indianapolis. Now, granted, I'm very thankful we have countywide efforts like Indy Rents that are there, but specifically within our Northeast corridor, our neighborhood unfortunately lacks that of a direct neighborhood service provider. So whereas we know the great benefits of being able to have rent utility assistance within a community, that was something immediately on we suffered and lacked of for it. So that's, I think, been as an impact when the doors of the Forest Manor Multi-Service Center closed, a gap I don't feel has been fulfilled. So I would say more so, I think, more strategic attention relative to that, how we can help strengthen that network. So that, for instance, when some of these temporary safeguards, like the moratoriums, are lifted, we're in a better position to feel like we know specifically who and where we can actually navigate our residents for that immediate assistance.
So making everything clear, Patrice, sounds like what Ashley is dealing with. I guess keeping the lines of communication open from group to group within a certain area. And Patrice, it sounds from other conversations that we've had that that kind of collaboration is a big challenge. Is it for you there on the Northwest side?
It is very. So we are one of the only community center north of 38th Street. So we are not only trying to collaborate with other social services like myself, we are really relying heavily on faith-based organizations because we do have a lot of large institutions out here, and then also smaller entities to try to help combat a lot of our basic needs in this area. So it definitely provides a little difficulty as we're moving along through this. And then the inability to communicate face-to-face and trying to do everything via technology and Zoom and bringing everyone up to speed just convolutes it all.
What do you think of the report, though, and how it related to your area? I'll ask you the same question I asked Ashley.
I really appreciated the report. I thought it brought it to light of what we were facing. I know that we had a discussion around the poverty level for my community because our community has a working poor. So we are right at the cuffs of the 100% poverty. So looking at it from a different perspective and that next level and looking at how those numbers are impacted. I think that we will see a lot of those numbers as far as unemployment and things like that, even the numbers be higher because they are working. They are making okay wage. We will say they have a job. And so not being able to see that data kind of tells our story, but it doesn't tell everything. And if we can look at it from that perspective, I think you'll see some alarming numbers as well.
Well, you're getting into what I wanted to know next. And that is how do you know how you'll use the data from this report yet? Do you know what effect it might have once you apply?
Yeah. So the first thing we have done since we receive the data is really try to saturate the 46254 zip code with our information to make sure that they know that we're here and we can help them with all of the services that they may need. The second thing that we've seen was the number of unemployment applications that was submitted. And so we have reached out to our Park 100 companies and are setting up job fairs and hiring opportunities here at the center and in some of our apartment complexes in this area to make sure that we are getting individuals here and getting them employed. And then the last thing is really keeping track of the areas that are being hit the hardest by COVID and trying to provide them with additional services ongoing.
We've considered doing some more coverage on Park 100. For people who aren't familiar, Patrice, what is Park 100?
So Park 100 is the area of the city closest to the Georgetown, Zionsville, 86th Street space. And it has multitude of warehouses, companies, IT companies, technical companies, medical companies, and food industry companies within that area. And pretty much employs a large majority of working individuals in the city. And so we are minutes away from there. There are thousands of vendors or businesses over there that hire about up to 10,000 or so numbers. I think that was the last we've seen, 10,000 or so employees.
Matt, we'll get back to you. You're hosting workshops about this report, this Savvy report, with different groups. What are those workshops like right now?
Yeah, well, we were happy to receive support from Glick Philanthropies to continue some research that we started in 2019 about long-term trends in poverty. And that was sort of the impetus behind these workshops. So what we found reflects a lot of what Ashley and Patrice are saying. There are older suburban neighborhoods built primarily in the 60s and 70s that we don't typically think of as the highest need areas in the city, but they have experienced the biggest increase in poverty, both in terms of rate and just the number of people in poverty over the last 10, 20 years compared to other neighborhoods around the city. So, and these kind of neighborhoods encompass the Northeast and the Northwest side. But yet a lot of our infrastructure for serving those in need is located in the center of the city. So in terms of community centers, transit, healthcare, a lot of these things are centrally located. And those are located in, you know, neighborhoods that have traditionally had the highest need. But we have this increasing need in these older suburban neighborhoods that we haven't had to deal with in the past. And so we wanted to bring together folks who work in those neighborhoods specifically, and also local government and funders who work citywide but could pay special attention to those areas, to come up with new strategies and creative solutions to dealing with what are some growing trends in terms of poverty out there. So just to put some numbers to it, for a long time, the kind of center city of Indianapolis has had the highest poverty rates for about the last 50 years. And that's still the case. But I will say 50,000 people live in poverty in the center city, whereas now 90,000 people currently live in poverty in these older suburban areas like the Northeast side and the Northwest side.
Today we're talking about a new report that looked into health and economic impact of the COVID-19 pandemic on neighborhoods in Indianapolis. And we have with us the information designer and analyst at the Polis Center at IUPUI, Matt Nolan, who you just heard. We also have Patrice Duckett, executive director of the Faye Bickard Glick Neighborhood Center, and Ashley Gervitz, executive director of the United Northeast Community Development Corporation. Matt, I'll stay with you. How hard is it to turn these reports into something that people can digest and understand in the context of their own area and work, like Ashley and Patrice have? I guess it can be intimidating for non-researchers to get this giant report full of data and really know what to take from it.
Yeah, that's really our goal at Savvy and at the Polis Center, is to not just create research, but create community-based research. So that's information that's developed in partnership with and for people in the community, both residents and decision makers and nonprofits, things like that. So some of the ways we do that are to make everything interactive so that you can really, you know, not just read a report, but see a map where you can drill down into your specific zip code or neighborhood and see what the numbers look like there, instead of maybe just the overall trends. And in this case in particular, we also had a challenge where we're measuring ballpark maybe 20 different indicators at once, right? From COVID-19 cases to unemployment claim rates to poverty rates and, you know, another 17, right? So we needed to come up with a way to make this a simple, like single quantity that could describe the impact relative to other neighborhoods. So that's to do that, we used a statistical tool called an index, where you basically need to take all these different things we're measuring and put them on the same scale, right? Because it's hard to compare 22% poverty rate to $47,000 median household income. Like, how do you judge those two? And, you know, it's apples and oranges. So instead, we used what's called a Z index or a Z score to kind of, it's a measure that just says how far above or below average is this number. So if your median household income is far above average compared to the county, you might get a 1 or a 2 on that score. If it's far below average, you might get a -1 or a -2. If it's right at the average, you'd score 0. And so by using that, we could aggregate all these different measures together into a single score that could tell us overall where is the highest impact. And then you can take that and dig into the details and find out what's driving that score.
Ashley Gervitz, was it easy enough for you to read?
Yes, absolutely. Just building off of Matt's point about the interactive maps, it honestly can keep you looking and inquiring for hours. And you feel like you have some very viable information just to really help justify impacts that's actually happening within the community. Like a great example is reviewing unemployment claims, the increase of calls to 211 and rental assistance. That information very much has been helpful in how and who we, you know, seek additional assistance from, and being able to assure also in the long run, us looking at our objectives, our outcomes, and be able to have some very viable measures to see, is our work that we're doing impactful or not, to help change the course of some of the dire need here for our area.
We've been talking about, you know, the issues in your area that have kind of been made more visible because of the pandemic. What about issues that have been made significantly worse since this started? Ashley, what has this really highlighted?
Absolutely. I would one say us having a sustainable network as far as information delivery. I think Patrice brought up a very good point where services before was easy, where you're able to convene face to face. When that was gone, it really pointed to the needs as far as us re-examining how we're getting information out. One innovative way just to cross our steps was coming up with a door knocker for a lit drop. So information, where to get services, was at least at every doorstep. It provided a little bit more peace at night that we weren't leaving anyone behind. I think also as well, we are starting to see, unfortunately, an uptick of various violent crimes, but not so much where it's diminishing the fact that our area is only seen for the negative, right? But again, it just makes us more cognitive into the fact of we have to do some, you know, deeper dives into how we can see what's happening as an affliction, and us just being that of, I think, greater neighbors to one another and getting the viable support to see that other reduction as into why some of these crimes are occurring.
Patrice Duckett, I'd love to hear the same from you on your neighborhood. What issues have significantly worsened by the pandemic and the lockdown? Patrice, are you there?
Sorry, couldn't get my mute off.
common problem these days. That's all right.
The first thing is what has worsened for us is the conditions of some of our seniors in our community. Our goal has always been to at least see them, touch them, talk to them. So we have not been able to do so. And so the health of some of our seniors is starting to rise with unhealthy conditions and situations. So that's one issue that we see. Two is that we were already in what we would consider a working poor area where individuals are barely making it past week-to-week income. And so having this pandemic happen has really put a lot of individuals in a very scary situation. So we are fighting against time and in some cases of keeping individuals within their home. So homelessness has started to slowly rise, and evictions, which we're glad that we don't have any of those, but the threat of evictions is starting to happen as well. And then the last thing, because I am a community center and I do get to work with youth inside of our center through our preschool and our before and after care, is the mental health of our children. We're starting to see behaviors. We're starting to see children that are unhappy. And so we don't talk a lot about those things because, you know, we think they're 100% resilient, but they are impacted by this. And so we have tried to do other programs and opportunities and some healthy things to get their mind at ease and keep them on a very positive path.
We're going to take a quick break. We're talking about how the COVID-19 pandemic has impacted specific neighborhoods in Indianapolis. And if you have questions or comments you'd like to share for our guests, you can find us on Facebook or Twitter at All in Indiana. Or you can leave us a voicemail. Call 866-476-3881, 866-476-3881. I'm Matt Pelser. We're back with more in 90 seconds. This is All In. This is All In. I'm Matt Pelser. Back now to our discussion on a new report on the health and economic impact of the COVID-19 pandemic on neighborhoods in Indianapolis. As always, we would love your questions and comments. Find us on Facebook and Twitter at All In Indiana, or leave us a short voicemail with your first name and where you're calling from. You can call 866-476-3881 to do that, 866-476-3881, or leave us a high-quality audio message with our All In Vox Pop app. Just get it wherever you get apps. It's free and very easy to use. Our guests are Patrice Duckett, Executive Director of the Faye Bickard Glick Neighborhood Center, Ashley Gervitz, Executive Director of the United Northeast Community Development Corporation, and Matt Nolan, Information Designer and Analyst at the Polis Center at IUPUI. So, Matt, are you working with city government on this and maybe state government to make sure they understand what kind of data is being collected?
Well, we certainly have worked with them on the research, so they provided a lot of data. I mean, specifically about the city's rental assistance program and, you know, the state's Department of Workforce Development data. So they were a big help in that regard. And we have also reached out to them for participation in these workshops, and we work closely with them through this research and a lot of other research to relay what our results and findings are, and also just work hand in hand with them on specific targeted research projects.
But do you think that our city and state governments are as aware as they should be generally about what researchers are learning during all this? Is there enough communication happening?
I can't really speak to that, but I do know we've seen a definite need in the in our findings that there's need for a lot more funding, essentially. There's an impending eviction crisis looming, according to some of our modeling, and there's clearly rampant job loss that's hurt the low-income workers, you know, substantially worse than high-income workers. And so these things combined just mean when some of the current protections, like the CDC's federal eviction moratorium, end, we are going to have large-scale problems on our hands that we haven't seen in this city for a long, long time.
And as you've done research since the pandemic started, are there any common misconceptions you see, things that don't seem to be true according to the data?
Well, not too much, honestly. Like, I'm going to echo what Ashley and Patrice have said. Often, as is often the case with this research, there aren't that many surprises. It's like putting quantitative teeth behind what folks who work in these communities already know. We've seen, for example, we've heard that COVID impacts people of color more than white residents. And we definitely saw that in terms of these high impact zip codes where both the health and economic crisis have been worse. Those zip codes are 2/3 of the population there are people of color. In the low impact zip codes, only 1/5 of the population are people of color. And when it comes to disability, we see that trend as well, where 15% of folks in high impact zip codes are people with a disability compared to 10% in low impact zip codes. And we see that with poverty and educational attainment too. This crisis, it's no surprise, but it's really exacerbated inequity and hit those who are already suffering economically the hardest.
So, Patrice, what Matt just said, it sounds like the data backs up what you already knew, but you're in a unique position as the executive director of a community center to actually interact with residents. And you can look at data all day, but are there questions or concerns that you hear from people who live there who contact you? What are people asking about?
I think the biggest thing is just for my area is worrying about evictions and how can they stay in their home. The second thing is about education. Is it safe for their children to go back to school? We've even had to open up an e-learning site here for the Pike and Washington Township residents who know they need to have their children online doing e-learning, but have to go back to work. And so they need a place to go. And so we're bringing them here versus allowing them to go back to school because they're not comfortable with them going back to school. So we get a lot of those questions, like how safe is it for my children to come? How safe is it for my children to go back to school? We're just trying to be encouraging, having them follow the data, having them follow the CDC guidelines, and staying abreast of the truth and understanding what they can actually do at home. I think that's a lot of things that they're unaware of, is what can I do at home to make sure I'm safe as well.
How many people are you serving with the e-learning sites? Is it, well, I mean, with social distancing and whatnot in mind, is it crowded in there, I guess?
No, not necessarily, because we are preschool and we are a before and after care program. So we can service up to about 150 youth at a 10 per classroom capacity or less. So we have a lot of space here to be able to do that. And currently we're doing about 20 to 25 students here. The numbers were larger than that at the beginning of the year, but now based on this week, a lot of the schools have started a new phase of allowing students to come in. So parents are getting a little bit more comfortable with letting them go back to school. So Pike has taken more of our students back, and then Washington Township as well.
So it sounds like broadband is an issue there. Ashley, are the same concerns being raised there by the people you talk to, evictions and education? Is there anything else on the list?
Yes, very much similar concerns. I would also say as well, just more so from the Black community standpoint and the perceptions and stigmas behind getting tested. Right. It's something I would be remiss if I didn't mention, just mere to the fact of we know the importance of getting tested. But, you know, historical context, we can even look at in the state of Indiana when we had experiments like Lyle Station, where we have that extra layer of making sure they trust the fact of they can get tested. But ultimately, once they get tested, can we open that up to be a pipeline so they can get a continuum of good, you know, care that also can be culturally affirming, just to just knowing how it's been used as a tool against their community before. So I would definitely echo that. I think also adding on one other layer is the fact of our community as a whole, we do have pockets of food deserts. So some questions I've also received are, all right, well, what happens once these food distributions drive end? And, you know, it's a very much valid question and concern. So working very hard to fix the food ecosystem is definitely top priority. So that way we don't have to worry about the food that's in the boxes being healthy at that, but also too, there's a consistent place that can help them have good, healthy food access and not relying on gas stations after we get things cleared up with the pandemic is other items too for our consideration.
We're talking to Ashley Gervitz, Executive Director of the United Northeast Community Development Corporation. We also have with us Patrice Duckett, Executive Director of the Faye Bickard Glick Neighborhood Center, and Matt Nolan, Information Designer and Analyst at the Polis Center at IUPUI. And we're talking about a new report on the health and economic impact of the COVID-19 pandemic on neighborhoods in Indianapolis. So, Ashley, you brought up a buzz term, culturally affirming care. Can you kind of explain what that is? Is for people who might not be familiar?
Yes. So culturally affirming is just another way of making sure when we're looking into racial equity, inclusion, that really at the baseline of it is that there's empathy of certain classifications. You know, if you are a part of a specific constituency like the Black community, that there's knowing an acknowledgement of maybe socioeconomic barriers that one experiences. So this goes into a broader term where, for instance, we know it would be easy to say, hey, go get a job, right? But if we're not looking at the impacts as the challenge is to get a job relative to different disparities for, we'll say, the Black community, it may be difficult. And that plays a major thing, too, just in care, where often or not, some of those systemic barriers are very much hard for people to feel like already their struggles. But if I open up again, will they understand exactly where I'm coming from? So it's more of just affirming personal beliefs or different perspectives when accessing areas of care.
We have a listener voicemail I want to get to. This is from Mike, who has a question about federal relief funds. Let's listen.
Hello, my name is Mike, and I'm calling from Indianapolis. And I was wondering if the panelists would care to comment on what my state state representative, Greg Porter, remarked about federal relief money in the under the CARES Act, that Indiana was given $1.4 billion and only $300 million has been dispersed so far. And he's asking the governor to readdress and offer new expenditures, and I'm wondering how that, how the today's panelists, this being Tuesday, would react to that. Thank you.
Patrice Duckett, have you seen any of that funding or know how or whether or not you can access any of it?
I believe we are accessing it through the Indy Rents program. I think that's a part of the CARES funding. And so far, we spent $15.5 million with the help of the city and then also Bonner Center, with the intention to have 14.4 more additional dollars to come down to community centers like myself to continue helping with rent into the end of the year. So I do know that that has been part of the funding, but I'm not sure of where the additional funding has been allocated. We definitely are advocate of that. Me and the other community centers would love to continue to help individuals with rent until the mid first quarter of the of 2021, just to ensure that everyone can properly get on their feet and the threat of eviction is eliminated.
Well, with all that in mind and all of the funding sources that you know of, and that are still coming in, you know, amid the pandemic and amid all this uncertainty, I don't know, do things feel stable there at all right now?
My organization, yes, I would say it feels stable because there's a need and funders and the city is doing whatever it can to make sure that we stay stable so that we can help individuals. But just like any other business and any other organization, we just don't know what the future holds. So we can pan ourselves out until the end of the year, but we just don't know what the future holds, you know?
Ashley Gervitz, what about you? Do things feel stable for you and the communities you serve?
No.
Short answer.
Honest, no. But I just to echo off of the caller's statement, if I'm not mistaken, because we are really fortunate of, say, Representative Porter's advocacy, because he does represent Northeast Indianapolis. And it goes to an overlying thing relative to some of the economic and social disparities that the Indiana Black Legislative Caucus was championing as a whole. Now, if I'm not mistaken, this is just making sure of those expenditures that there are, I think, easier and more accessible avenues I would love to see for the personal protective equipment. So happy to see like city's efforts to find out ways of reimbursement, other things too, relative to like United Way and getting that rapid refunds available too. But I think more so it is, while we have some like smaller mom and pop shops, maybe minority based access to insurance, rental assistance, to see like already going into COVID, there were deficits of different services. So with it, just seeing that of the extra funds that are there, are we really providing, some stability for those that are already on the brink of keeping their doors open or not? So I'm very thankful for Representative Porter's continuously putting our needs to the forefront for our area. But also, too, I think the greater push is that we're not putting Band-Aids that are short-term on these long, deepened wounds. Going back to Matt's point, like where we are dealing with some of our urban, neighborhood settings that often are not before. Maybe the need wasn't as prevalent, but they are here now. So as much as we can do just to stress getting that relief to our brothers and sisters, and more so seeing that of not fearing like Indiana reforcing those returns to go back to federal government for not using utilizing it. I say every effort possible to strategically provide relief. Let's go ahead and go for it. Especially if it can be good for the better benefit of us all.
Matt, we've got just about a minute left. What more do you want to look at to research now that this report's out? What's the most pressing thing you think we need to know more about?
Well, we've gotten a lot of great ideas from the folks on this panel today, and I appreciate that. One thing we're considering is a look at small businesses and the impact on those firms and workers in those firms, and specifically with a focus on these two neighborhoods. We know there's a lot of small businesses in both these areas and across the city, and this has been a devastatingly difficult time for those establishments. So we want to understand how that impacts the services that are available to people, the income coming to workers, and the wealth of the folks that own and operate those businesses.
Well, I want to thank all of our guests for taking the time today. Matt Nolan is information designer and analyst at the Polis Center at IUPUI. Matt, thanks for your research and thanks for your time today.
Thank you so much.
Ashley Gervitz is executive director of the United Northeast Community Development Corporation. Great insight, Ashley. Thanks.
Thank you.
Patrice Duckett is executive director of the Faye Picard Glick Neighborhood Center. Patrice, thanks for your time and good luck.
No, thank you.
Our producers are Drew Dodlin and Micah Yason. Scott Cameron's our managing editor. Adam Gross is our technical director, and he composed our theme. Our podcast can be found wherever you get podcasts. Tomorrow, we'll have a conversation on Asian American business owners in Indiana and how discrimination during the pandemic has played a role in hurting business. You can find us in the meantime on Twitter and Facebook at All In Indiana for topic alerts and discussion. I'm Matt Pelser. Thanks for listening. This is All In.